Two fat expats, here we go again. Two fat expats.
Sarah, episode 13.
Yes.
And today we're going to talk about the empty nest expat and also about sort of having to be without your children when they are perhaps going off to another country and you're staying behind.
And something that you're living through right now.
Yes. So I decided last week that the time had come that I had to kind of write about Lizzie. And it's a weird thing as a blogger, isn't it? Because you share so much of your life with people and then you realise that you kind of have to share everything because it feels dishonest
if you don't
and it was such a huge thing for us as a family making the decision for Lizzie to head off to boarding school. And I felt that I really had to write about it because it's very much an expat issue and it's something that many expats are faced with. But I was holding back because I didn't really feel I was quite strong enough already for
the judgment,
and defending it. And
but what surprised me when I read through all of your comments is that more often than not, people were really supportive.
Oh, look, 99%.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, when I saw that come up in my feed that you'd written about it, my heart
here we
was
go.
Like, oh, I was prepared to be over here with wine and chocolates and stuff because I thought maybe a lot more people would be judgy.
Yeah, I did too. And I guess I thought they would be because people tend to be that way when you tell them. But like they have this really huge reaction to it because everyone personalizes it and they have ideas. And I also think a lot of people don't understand boarding school. If you haven't been, it's very hard not to understand.
And you've been?
I've been. I was a country kid in South Australia who I very much decided too that I wanted to go off to boarding school. I could see that there were kids that were going, and my parents, my mum was a city girl who married a country bloke. And I think she sort of wanted to give me that opportunity. And I had been very close to an uncle who'd passed away and left some money. And so my parents were in a stage where they could consider it, you know, otherwise they would never have been able to financially. I mean, that's the thing in Australia, boarding school is horrendously expensive.
Yeah, ridiculously expensive.
It is, really. And, you know, you have to really sacrifice to send kids to school. So it makes it doubly as...
I know Matt and his brother went to boarding school, and I remember his parents saying the day that Pad finished year 12 was just party time because they actually got to spend the money on themselves.
Yes, my father liked to remind me often that we could have had a speedboat. And it was, you know, you just knew when you were there that it was an absolute privilege that you were getting the opportunity to go. And I not once felt like I was being sent away. You know, people use this phrase of I could never send my kids away.
And I think that the children are also part of the decision-making process.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
that
Lizzie
has been.
She wants to go, doesn't she? You're not sending
really
her away. You're not banishing her from the family. She's made this decision.
And it is. It is painful and hard and just impossible to contemplate her not being in the house with us.
And I can't wrap my head around it because I then think about it from my and I'm thinking about a six-year-old Sadie. And I can't wrap my head around it. But it is something that we've always talked about, even before we became expats, because Matt is so pro boarding school because he just had the best time of his life.
And I think, you know, when you say you can't wrap your head around six-year-old Sadie, that's exactly how it feels, because when I look at Lizzie, she's six-year-old Lizzie. She's not 14 and a half. Well, actually, she's not even 14. She's 15 next month. And I mean, I can't even...
She's a young woman.
And she really is. And that is what
head on her shoulders.
Do you know, I was holding little Henry Hot Dog yesterday and I had him sort of wrapped up in my arms, and I said to him, do you know, I can look at you and still see exactly you as a baby. I can see your baby face. I can see the little baby that I brought home. And Lizzie was sitting across from me and I said to her, and you, I said, every time your hair's wet and it's all back, I see you as a little baby.
I said, Sadie turned seven last week and I held her in my arm. Oh, you're not my baby anymore, but I could I saw it the day that we brought her home from hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a really interesting article on Brainchild magazine,
mm-hmm.
and it was written by a really lovely woman called Rachel, and I never know how to say her middle names. It's Rachel, I think, P. Jones, P-I-E-H. Someone please Pay? Tell me. Pay, maybe. Pay. Rachel Pay. Anyway, Rachel kind of comes over to the blog now and then and leaves a couple of comments, mm-hmm. and she writes for several different expat sites as well, but she had written a post called What Not to Say to a Person Who's Sending Their Child to Boarding mm-hmm. School, and this is why it is very it's difficult to talk about out loud, because people do say things, and people you love, like people who are your best friends, say things all the time, and some of the things she'd written were, I could never do that. And all of these things, I have to say, are things that have been said to me. Another one was, I love my kids too much to do that.
That's the one that breaks my heart for you, that people have said that to you. Because
brutal.
Anyone that doesn't know you personally, I can vouch for the fact that you are an amazing mum, all over your kids.
Yeah, like they are my entire world.
Yeah.
And almost to my detriment. But I, yeah, when someone says, oh, I love my kids too much, I don't know.
Them saying to you, you don't.
You obviously don't.
Yeah.
You obviously can't love your children how I love my children, because I could never do that. I can't imagine doing that, or it's probably easier for you than it would be for me. And, you know, I'm too attached to my kids. People say this stuff all the time. And
what do you say to them when they've said that to you?
I do a range of things. I think I felt really sorry for a girlfriend last week, because I have a really lovely friend here who sent me an apology text last week saying, Kirsty, I'm so sorry. I've read your post and I know that I was one of those people, and mm-hmm. I did that. And I just wasn't thinking. And her and I had been out for breakfast one morning at the souk, mm-hmm. and a lady walked past who kind of knew some other people nearby, and they stopped to talk, and this woman had like a 16-year-old girl with her who was home from boarding school. Wow. And I never used to talk about our choice with Lizzie out loud, because mm-hmm. I wasn't ready to sort of have to defend it. And I said to this girl, oh, you're at boarding school? And she said, yes. And I said, do you like it? And she said, I love it. And she said, you know, it's just been the best thing for me. Yeah. And, you know, without thinking, I said to her, oh, that's so lovely to hear, because, you know, we're thinking my eldest will go off to school in a couple of years. And my girlfriend next to me just went, what? And she said, and I remember she just said, you are the last person I would have ever expected to do that. Like, I cannot believe you're doing that. Like, just you doing that.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to do with that, you know, because you're basically saying, you can't understand that me, who really loves their children, could possibly do something that's so unloving.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's really hard.
It's not unloving.
No. So, I mean, my view on it, and I've written about it, and people, I can't remember what I called the post, it was something like, oh, I can't believe you're sending her to boarding school or something. But I think, for me, it feels like a very selfless act, mm-hmm. because I don't want her to go. I can't imagine her mm-hmm. not in my house. I can't imagine her, and I'm going to get very sad, so I won't go into it too much, but I can't, you know, just the idea of us being five and not six, and that she's not at the dinner table, that she's not in the car on the way to school, that, you know, she's just not, that I'm not contemplating all of her stuff, and also the idea that she will go and all of her friends will still be here and I will still, see them and they'll mm-hmm. be living her old life, and all of that.
It's going to be a grieving process.
Huge. It'll be a huge grieving process. And so, but to me, the flip side of it is, the reason she really wants to go is because we go home for 4 months of the year almost mm-hmm. now. And so Lizzie has friends who live in Australia, and she sees their life and she sees how they live.
Yeah.
And she wants it. Yeah. And
it is a different life for teenagers back home compared to here in the Middle East.
It's incredibly different. When you are a young girl in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
you are, and particularly at her school, you know, you're constantly talked about your dress sense and yeah. what you wear mm-hmm. and being, you know, conscious
whether
of whatever.
You're wearing the right thing and,
yeah. And so, you know, I really find with Lizzie, you know, we went out for New Year's Eve and I bought her this beautiful sort of outfit to go out for New Year's Eve, and it was just like a pantsuit, but it was shorts
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, sleeveless, it's just got straps at the top.
Yeah.
She looks absolutely amazing in it. Yeah. It was horrifying because she looked about 18 and she was 14. On Thursday night here, we had our family movie night, and we would have had, I think we had something like 16 kids and 14 adults yeah. at the house, and the 14-year-olds were all sort of laying on a blanket watching the movie.
Yeah.
And I was saying to you earlier, you know, it was like after they watched the movie, it was like, you know, Mum, can we walk down to the park? And I have this great sense of
She's safe
and it's
fine.
You're
in a gated community.
We're in a gated community.
There's security guards.
There's cameras mm-hmm. everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Hearing eyes coming from the living rooms.
I know everyone on the compound, you know, they would say, you know, if they saw anything untowards, whatever. So she lives.
Great for you.
It's fantastic for me. I know exactly what she does at all mm-hmm. points of the time. She doesn't go anywhere without me driving her there. You know, there's no public transport for her.
No.
So her life is very sheltered. She lives this life where in an expat world, you know, the majority of kids at her school, I would say 90% of them have two parents at home. Yeah.
They're
professionals.
Yeah.
So she lives this world where, you know, there's strict policies on any kind of, you know, what they would class as bullying
mm-hmm.
would, you know, not even make it, I think, into the Australian
Absolutely.
System or American system mm-hmm. at home. Like it would just be a normal day. I mean, I think one of my key things was when we were home at the summer, we went round to a friend's house. The cricket was on at the Adelaide Oval. We have friends who have a son who's the same age as Lizzie. He had caught a bus into town, gone to the cricket all day with his mm-hmm. mates. There were a couple of adults that happened to wander through and check that they were all okay mm-hmm. on the hill. He then hopped on a bus at the end of the day, came home. He was perfectly fine. Everything was fine. And I know for Lizzie and I, we kind of looked at his day and his life.
No,
and
she could never do that here.
Not in a million years. And, you know, she just doesn't get to do that. She does. A lot of her friends now at that age are starting to get part-time jobs where uh-huh. they work in delis or they wash glasses or
babysitting.
They work at catering companies. Yeah. They do all sorts of part-time uh-huh. bibs and bobs.
And she can't do that. Here.
No, she can't.
Maybe a bit of babysitting, and that's probably it, I would think. Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I would like her to start. You know, she'll be 15 and a half going on 16 when mm-hmm. she goes. And I think that is old enough to be able to catch a bus into the city
Absolutely.
And buy yourself, you know, a new school jacket or whatever and new socks and hop on a bus and come home.
And I think for Lizzie, because she's spent her whole life as an expat kid, hasn't she?
Yes.
She's never lived in Australia.
Never.
So for her to stay here, finish school in Doha, and then all of a sudden be put in university in Australia or wherever she chooses to go to university,
mm-hmm.
that is a huge transition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by her being able to go to school now in Australia and gain a little bit of independence and maybe make a few mistakes and learn from her mistakes, by the time she starts university, she's got it, and she understands the Australian way of life.
Yeah.
But she gets snippets of it when she goes home every year, but that's not a true sense of living at home, is it? Because it's holiday time.
No, and while our little, you know, expat kids get to travel all over the world,
mm-hmm.
they don't have that same sort of street smarts that
Absolutely.
Probably kids at home have. So while, she's been to Paris and London and, mm-hmm. you know, everywhere, I think if I dropped her in the middle of the mall, well, you know, I was saying when I went to boarding school, I can remember we went, you know, my first week I went with two girls. We went into the mall. Both of the girls looked at me and said, I'll meet you back here at 4 o'clock. And I was absolutely shitting myself because I had never been in the mall on my own.
Yeah.
I was this country kid mm-hmm. who'd, you know, only ever been down the street with my mum.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of always knew everybody and everything and felt completely safe. And that is my kids' life as expat kids.
Absolutely.
I always think it's expat life can often be very much like living in a small country town.
And that's how I always describe Doha like that. Doha, yes, to me is a small country town. It's a small community. Everyone knows everyone.
Yes.
You feel very safe.
Yes.
Your kids do live in a bubble.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Which I think is great for little kids.
Yeah.
Like your Henry, my Sadie. I think it's wonderful for them, but when they get to Lizzie's age, I think she needs a bit more.
Yeah, I know that it's not for everyone, and yeah, I do understand that there are lots of people that just say, well, I don't care if it's better for them, or well, I don't think that it is, or
yeah,
I think that our family should just stay together, uh-huh, until the very last point that they can.
Yeah.
And I understand, and I thought that it was really lovely that people managed to give their opinions, but just keep them really nice.
Without being nasty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think because, look, I come at it from, you know, I've only got a six-year-old. I didn't go to boarding school. My husband did. We have two different views on it, but it is something that we have spoken about even when I was pregnant with Sadie. Boarding,
yes,
school has always been a conversation. And whenever we've talked about it, Matt always ends up saying to me, you're thinking about it from your point of view and you're being selfish. You're not thinking about what's best for her.
Yeah.
And it's so true, and it's something that I'm like, oh, but she won't be next to me every night at dinner.
Yeah.
And, but I won't be able to take her shopping on the weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, I won't be able to help her with her homework.
Yeah.
But as Matt said, the greatest thing for him was going to boarding school where he had teachers there after school to help him with.
It's amazing.
Said,
yeah.
That alone was worth it.
Yeah. We called it prep. And you basically walked back across to school and there were teachers there and
there
you could, they were just there.
You don't get that being a kid coming home. And I know personally I can hardly deal with you two, Matt. I'm not going to be able to help when she gets into high school. So I think a lot of parents think of it from their point of view and actually not what's best for their child. Because I think it would be hard the first night that you sit down for dinner and she's not there. That's going to be heartbreaking.
Oh, it's going to be awful. The only thing that has kept me sort of thinking, okay, maybe this won't be too bad, is that when I looked at the holidays that we have here and the holidays that she has there,
mm-hmm,
I am actually going to see her every month up until about September.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think she starts on about February 2nd because our school year in Australia is, you know, January to December.
Yeah.
So we'll all be home, you know, for the Christmas holidays.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back, get everybody settled in school, and I'll go back with her.
Yeah.
But then in March we have spring break, so we're obviously all going back to Australia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in April she comes to us for a couple of weeks, and then in May it will be her birthday, so I'll go home.
Yeah.
And then it'll be June, and we'll be home.
Yeah.
And then we're home from June till the end of August.
Yeah.
So she will be right there under my nose, and I'll have access to her, you know, whenever I want. So that when I think that I can actually say to her, okay, well, I'll see you in 3 weeks or in 4 weeks, like it doesn't seem as heartbreaking as it was with the idea, you know, the idea that I just would have to drop her in a January and not see her, you know, for a couple of months. That just horrified me.
Yeah,
but
we're
lucky that it sort of, it really does
that
work out.
Mm. And Matt always said it's always more quality time with your parents.
Hugely.
When you come, because his mum and dad, if they got out for Sunday, if they had a full Sunday where he could come home,
well,
then his mum and dad would put on a massive lunch.
Yeah.
His best friends who are also his parents' friends,
they
would all sit around for Sunday lunch. And Matt said that probably wouldn't have happened had he just been going to school.
I know.
Sunday he would have been off with his friends.
Yeah.
Dad would have been doing something. So
he
said it was really quality time. I think for me that you had a lot of comments on your Facebook page and on the blog. And the thing that really got to me was that the children were actually part of the decision process.
Mm-hmm.
I think before we started talking about this episode and my thoughts about boarding school were just about me, Matt and Sadie.
Right.
I felt like, did she even have a choice?
Yes.
It was always Matt and I talking.
Yes.
And what I loved most is so many people commented that it was their children's choice to, they wanted to go.
Yes.
And they asked if they could go because they realised that maybe there were better options for them going back home or to another country for school.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of hit home for me. And the whole thing that it's a really selfless act.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that maybe they think,
well,
you had some horrible comments of people saying part-time parenting and all this kind of bullshit. when in fact it's actually a selfless act. Yeah. Because you are sitting there thinking about what you're missing out on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think out of everybody, I come out the worst out of all of this, right?
Because you're losing her for a certain amount of time. Yeah,
that's right.
But she's gaining so much more.
Yes.
So I think that was, you know, a few people said that that it was really a selfless act. And then this girl here, Meredy Crook, who went to boarding school, and she said it was the best decision my parents ever made.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting where a lot of people that went to boarding school will tell you that it's where they made their lifelong friends.
Oh, and when I look at Matt and his friends, and I think I've spoken about this before, you cannot chip into that friend. Do you know what I mean? Yes. There's no one.
They're like brothers.
They are like, and they act like, but they are so close.
Yeah.
So close. Yeah. It's like almost like a brotherhood.
Yeah.
And I look at them and I don't get jealous, but I just look at them and I don't know, I just love seeing them together when we go home, and it's, you can't get in there. You can't crack that apart.
No, and I think this is where things get, everything is very personal decision. And for us, a big part of this was G, my husband, he went to high school in Melbourne and went to a, you know, boys' school in Melbourne, and he had, you know, friends there and made friends there. And then his father made a different decision for work, and they bought a business in Queensland. So he actually finished year 12, they packed up the house, he drove across to Queensland, he moved there before they even did, he set up, you know, a house, and then he started university from scratch in Queensland with no friends, no background story or anything. Yeah. So for him, for us, we can't help but make the comparison with Lizzie of, if we keep her here in Doha and she finishes year 12 here, how will that look for her when she starts school in, or when she starts university without any, you know, sort of school friends or whatever? Yeah. And this is where America is very different than Australia, because in America, when you go off to university, the majority of people that go off to university, they go to a different state.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so, you know, you hunt around looking at colleges.
That's almost your first time away from home.
Yeah, and you choose somewhere else. And, you know, a few people do go in their home state, but the majority, I would say, go somewhere else. And then you live in residence and you have this amazing kind of college, you know,
experience
where you're all living away from home for the first time and you've got that freedom. You're in the same boat. And I think Americans are completely all hooked into that idea of that that's how it works, and they do it very well.
Yeah.
Whereas in Australia, you don't move state to go to university.
You almost tend to live at home with your parents for the first year or two, don't you?
Yeah, and unless you're a country kid.
Yeah,
and then you might, you know, go down. Yeah. And then you would probably live with other country kids.
Yeah.
And so for us with Lizzie, we couldn't help but think about Greg's situation and what had happened to him, and that he really struggled at university, because he said, you know, everybody had their school friends, or they came from a country town where they had other country friends and they had connections that bonded them, and he had nothing because he was a kid from Melbourne. So our hope for Lizzie is that she will then make those friends at boarding school. So she'll get that base, you know, she'll, when people ask her, you know, where are you from? You know, we have the beach house, which that was the whole reason of getting the beach house in the first place, was to start getting back into this routine of, we go back to Australia, this is what it looks like, this is what it is, get some pop culture references, start to build some roots in a place.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, a lot of when, you know, we always talk about the planning that comes with expat life and how it's really important to be thinking 5 years ahead all the time. And I think it is really important that you start to accept the timing of how things are going to look. Yeah. So get your head around it. Because I know when I went off to boarding school, it was a decision that was made, you know, sort of within a year or before I went. It wasn't ever like a lifelong discussion.
Yeah.
Whereas I know that the kids that always knew that that was the case, they knew the reasons, they knew why.
Yeah.
They were very confident with how. And I think when I look at Lizzie, she's the same. She has for the last few years.
So she's known for the last few years that this is the plan.
Well, and she's been involved in that process. Yeah. So it was more like, boarding school was kind of talked about in a, well, maybe, you know, it could be a possibility. It's something we could think of. Mm-hmm. We never promised it, but we just sort of said, well, you know, maybe that's something we could look at.
Yeah.
Perhaps we could do it. And then a couple of years ago it was, well, you know, should we go and have a look? And then you can have a look and you can decide. She was very clear on which ones she wanted and which ones she didn't and which ones felt right and which ones didn't, mm-hmm. which ones she wasn't even going to bother looking at.
Yeah.
And she was the major driver of that decision. Yeah. So, yes, so some advice. When I was asking around for advice on what to do with people leaving, because, you know, this
is... this can be anyone. Yeah, this is not just kids going to boarding school.
Because that's the thing. I don't want this to be all about boarding school. It's just about the process of your child goes to live in another country and having to deal with that. Because
also, for I have a couple of friends whose parents became expats later on in life. So their children are growing up and they've got their life sorted.
But then they left them behind.
That happens actually, you know, parents that are sort of in their late 40s, early 50s, their children are growing up, they've got their life set up and they decide to leave the UK, Australia, what have you, and become expats later on in life.
Yeah.
So they're leaving behind potential grandchildren, everything. So it's kind of like the reverse.
Yeah. So I think when I looked at sort of advice for what to do, I think all of it was fairly common sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that really stuck in my mind was about the seek support.
Yeah.
Because I think I had been letting this decision eat away at me because I didn't want to talk about it and share it.
Because you were worried about how people would react.
Yeah, and it was stupid because when you do talk about it and you do talk about it honestly and how you feel, people will really support mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
And
even if they're, if it's not the same decision that they would make, I think if you've got a good set of friends that you can be open and honest with, whether it's the same choice that they would make or not, you know, they're going to be there for you.
Yeah. So I think even if your child's gone off to university, that would be my thing, is just try and stay positive, but also share it and talk to a friend. And I can't remember, someone in one of those comments said that her and her girlfriend had a deal that she was allowed to be miserable for a month and she could talk about it. Yeah, and then she had to get over it. So, I mean, maybe you need to do, if you are losing your children, and I hate that term because you're not losing them, because you will still Skype with them on a daily basis. You will still text with them. I have two friends just this year whose children have gone off to university, and one of those friends, she's lost both of her kids like bang bang after each other, mm-hmm. and she's devastated, absolutely devastated, and it is hard for her day to day trying to deal because it feels like it's just all over, all of a sudden it was just gone. But for her, it's been a matter of she's been back and she's seen them, she's had great times with them, she's got them set up, and she was saying it's those tiny things you can do. And I now get it, because my mum did this with me, of, you know, you walk in and the flat is like an absolute bomb site, and
so
you clean it and you feel fantastic that you've spent half an hour cleaning with them and laughing, and you've been, oh mum, thank you so much, or you know, you went, she said her big thing for her daughter on one of the last trips home was she took her daughter to the supermarket and bought proper groceries, and her daughter was just like, oh, we're allowed to have, you know, the expensive vegetables, not the cheap vegetables, because mum was here. So I think, you know, you've just got to start planning how you're going to, you know, the gift packages. You know, my mum used to send me lots of sort of care packages. That's right. Yeah. So she used to send little care packages, and it was fantastic, like just getting these tiny little surprise packages from home. So you will still talk on the phone, and dare I say, I know a lot of people think, well, how can you be engaged on a day-to-day basis and that it's not really the same as being together? But sometimes with teens, not being together face-to-face, it's a lot easier to have a conversation.
Yes.
I had a lot of conversations with my mum that I probably wouldn't have had up front.
But I even see that as an adult.
Yes.
I think I'm very open with my mum on emails and FaceTime, that maybe I would probably keep some of those things
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so there was this great article called Why College Life Can Be Harder for Young Expats and Third Culture Kids. And I thought it was really interesting because it was the first time it had kind of clicked with me that when your child goes off to university, they are basically repatriating.
They're mini expats.
And as grown-up expats, we talk about all the time how repatriating is three times harder than going to another country. Mm-hmm. And people all the time on blogs and websites and Facebook pages share about their hardest move was their move home.
Yeah.
So I think
it's just... It's the finishing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's finality.
It is.
Isn't it?
It is. And it's also finding your tribe again at home, and people have moved on.
In areas where people are not as open to making new friends as what they are in the expat world.
That's right. And, you know, I've had plenty of expat women write me notes about how they got back to their home country thinking, oh, I just can't wait to go to the park on a Friday with my kid, and that the people weren't talking to them or people found them overly friendly. And I think I've talked about this before.
It absolutely scares the shit out of me, to be honest.
Yes.
With you. When we ever think about, oh, when should we move back home, it scares the crap out of me because, one, I think home is this amazing,
magical place
that maybe the grass isn't so green on the other side, and to the whole making friends thing.
Yeah, because I think what I've noticed when I go home is I tend to be overly friendly because in the expat world, you can become instantly friends with someone because
you know their whole story within the first couple of minutes almost of meeting them, really.
Yeah, yeah. And you share things because you just know that you have to share and you've got to get it out there.
Yep.
And so when I go back to our place at the beach, I meet people and I can almost physically see them backing away from me because I'm so where do you live? What do you do? What are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Gee whiz, we're the same like that, aren't we? You know, and I can see them thinking, I don't need any more new friends.
Yeah.
I have a life. I'm quite fine and I don't really
thank you
know
very much.
Crazy lady.
And
where's and where's guitar? So I thought it was really interesting that in this post on the Wall Street Journal, they were saying that expat kids are infamous for wearing their hearts on their sleeves and that they get into nitty-gritty conversations and share at far more intimate levels faster than your average bear, and that they feel they've had to make friends easily in the past, and so they'll just be able to do the same at college.
So and they're mini expats.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. So
they're doing exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, and that they have that same sense of loss and separation, and that people don't get who they are because they don't understand where they fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can really see that happening with my little girl in that, you know, I knew when I went off to school that I was from Renmark and that I had a very strong base in Renmark and that I had a whole life there and I grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas she is going to have that excruciating conversation of, you know, oh, well, I was born in Australia, but my parents lived in Indonesia and then we moved to Kuala Lumpur and then we moved to Libya and then I went to kindergarten in Canada, but then I went to America and then we went to Qatar. And, you know, there's a whole, and I'm sure she won't even bother with any of that. Do you know, there'll be a quick sentence that kind of tries to wrap it all up.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have that same, you know, life, upbringing.
And I think that for Sadie, because Sadie's only ever lived here, I mean, apart from a short stint in Abu Dhabi, Doha is all she knows. But she can't say she's from Doha.
No, because she's not.
But if we're here for the next sort of 10 years and then she goes back home for boarding school, where does she say she's from?
Yeah.
Because she is from Doha, but she's not.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, this
is
her whole life here.
Yeah.
This is all that she knows.
Yeah.
And she can't say that she's from Doha.
Yeah. Well, it's like my little Fred when he says he's Australian and he says it with his American accent.
Yeah.
I'm Australian.
It's really neat.
Yeah. And my husband, he was an expat child, and his cousins still give him grief because they're all cattle people from far north Queensland, and he came inside, they'd all been outside mustering, and they said, what were you doing outside, Greg? And he said, we've been outside hunting bears. You could not find, I mean, I think my husband's got a very Queensland ochre accent, and I mean, the idea that when he was a kid he spoke with an American accent, because he went to school in the Philippines at an American school. So I guess I guess, too, that's probably why we don't freak out. You know, when people listen to Fred, they go, oh, you know, listen to his accent. But I think, yeah, it'll go.
Yeah, it'll go. Yeah.
So shall we talk about then Instagram? You wanted to say about an Instagram account that you liked?
Yes, I did. So it's at New York City, and it's an Instagram account by a girl called Liz Eswine, and she's actually got one of the most popular non-celebrity Instagram accounts in the world.
Wow.
She's a recent graduate of NYU, and she just takes the most amazing photos of New York City itself and then the people that live there. So it's almost like a picture, you know,
Humans of New York.
It's almost that, but like a pictorial version of it. Yeah. And from that, she's got over a million followers.
Wow.
And from that, she and a couple of other really popular Instagrammers have actually started up their own company called the Mobile Media Lab. And it's kind of like marketing agency for Instagram.
Wow.
So just from taking amazing photos on her time off from uni has then spawned into this amazing career for her. Yeah, so I'll put it in the show notes, but at New York City
is the
Instagram account.
And podcast. So we both have a new podcast this week. What's yours?
So mine is, well, as everyone knows, you and I were both obsessed with
Serial.
Yes. And so there's I wouldn't call it another offshoot of the Serial podcast, but it's a new podcast called The State versus Adnan Syed.
Right.
And it's actually hosted by his family friend, Rabia Chowdhury.
Now, she's the whole reason Serial started.
Because Sarah Koenig had written an article.
Right.
Was that how it's... And then Rabia got in contact with her.
Yeah. Rabia sent her information saying, you know, you should look at this case. He's innocent. Yeah.
So, obviously, this new podcast is going to take a different angle because Rabia thinks he is innocent, whereas Sarah really was down the middle. She never really said whether she thought he was innocent or guilty. And it's also co-hosts it with two lawyers. And I think it's back in the courts. But I can't wait to listen to it. I think it'll be real because I was a bit obsessed with that case.
Yeah, I was too. And so my podcast, I am loving. This is called The Longest Shortest Time. And Hilary Frank used to be on This American Life.
Right.
So when you listen to it, it has that real This American Life feel to it, which so did Sarah Koenig and Alex Bloomberg from Reply All. Mm-hmm. Hilary Frank does it with a woman called Joanna Solitaroff, but it's just Hilary's voice you hear. Joanna does the producing.
Right.
And it's just so, and I hate saying this, it's really real, but it is really real. I mean, I've written for a lot of women's magazines and parenting stuff and whatever, and I really thought I'd kind of had enough of writing and reading about mothering issues.
Yeah.
But this is brilliant. One of the examples of, I've listened to about three or four episodes now, but they had a great episode about a woman who worked full-time as a baker and her husband, who's an Irishman that she met in America, is the stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
And it was a really honest look at how that looks for them, but also something that drives me up the wall all the time is how he's an absolute superstar at school because he's a stay-at-home dad.
Whereas and if it was roles reversed, she would just be the ordinary.
She'd just be an ordinary mum. And he said, "I'm sure that people don't walk up to full-time mothers or stay-at-home mothers and say,
amazing.
You're amazing.
I can't believe you're doing it.
I know.
Yeah.
But then the flip side of that is people had dobbed on him to his wife, like said, oh, I saw him let such and such eat something off the floor.
They might not have said.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Very weird. But it was fascinating. And she was saying when she reads parenting websites, people talk about their husbands like she imagines her husband wants to talk about her.
Yeah.
So he was saying that she doesn't get home till late, you know, she's exhausted when she gets home, that it's not worth letting her cook because she makes such a mess in the kitchen and he still has to clean it all up.
Yeah.
And all this sort of stuff that she was saying that she then listens and reads women talking about their men and wants to stand up for the male counterpart saying, but no, it's not like that, it's like this. But it was great. She's just done one I just listened to this morning was called Real Teens, Fake Babies, and it was how they give the fake babies to look
and
after.
And programmed to cry and poo and all that. Yeah.
And what I found really interesting about that was...
They still do that, do they?
They do. Well, they were doing it in America and she focused in on these two girls.
But she said she realised sort of by about day three, because, I mean, the babies wake up four or five times in the night, like real babies do, and you have no idea what's wrong with them, and you have to go through all the different things to try and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And these girls were, they started to fall over. They were so exhausted and were just these scrambling messes. And one girl said, you know, I walked into the room and someone asked me a question and I just wanted to say, will you just shut up? I've had enough, you know. And I thought it was so interesting because these little girls did become like what we're like as frazzled mothers of newborns. And you just realise that, you know, there you deal with so much as the mother of a newborn, like physically, and I'm not talking about going back to work or not going back to work or any of that rubbish. Just the everyday of having a newborn, how much it scrambles your brain, and how much you just start to be run by this little person.
Yeah.
So you just talk about this little person constantly because they are running your life, and that's what these girls were like. They moaned and whined about these little babies that they had, but they loved them at the same stage because they were caring for them. It was really, really interesting.
Really,
it's a really good one. So it's called The Longest, Shortest Time. And I love that name because that's exactly what children is.
Yeah.
It is just this days that feel like they go forever, but then it's whiz by.
Yeah.
So your hashtag says...
Yeah, I did a bit of a Google search on what the most popular hashtags are at the moment.
Uh-huh.
And I thought selfie would be number one, but it's not.
Oh.
So one of the most popular hashtags out there is iPhone SIE.
Right.
SIA. I saw it at iPhones ya.
So that's kind of like Asia. But
and so I couldn't work out what it actually meant. And it actually, it popped up on, you know, the most popular for fashion, the most popular for food. And I was like, what? I couldn't work out the anagram at the end. So I Googled it and it's actually for people that are living or visiting Indonesia and Southeast Asia.
Wow.
So there's over 57 million photos using this hashtag. And when you click on it, there are some crappy photos of but just the most amazing photos of Indonesia and Asia.
Wow.
Of like food.
And I would love that.
You would, and that's what made me think you would really love it. So you can just go into the hashtag part of Instagram and search for it.
Yeah.
So that's a really good one to look up if you're a fan of Asia, like we are.
And, you know, I was talking about hashtags today and we were saying how hashtags can often get a bad rap because people say they're useless and that it's just, you know, false sympathy or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was a hashtag over the weekend. There was a terrible, terrible situation where a girl was meant to be getting married this weekend. Her name was Stephanie Scott and she was killed by a workmate and her body was found. But one of those hashtags was put your dress out, which was a spin on when Philip Hughes, the cricketer, died and Australians put their bats out and women put their wedding dresses out and it was just...
She was due to get married.
Yeah.
As we're recording this on a Sunday, she was due to get married yesterday and her body was found the night before.
Yeah, I think,
I think that's where social media and hashtags is such an amazing thing because, you know, people, women all over Australia were doing this. Now they can't get in contact with her family and tell them how sorry that, but by doing that, it just shows the family and her fiancé and their community that everyone is behind them.
That's right. And it's your chance because quite often you feel so helpless because you're miles away and, you know, you just, you want to, I mean, if you knew those people and you lived in their town, you'd bake a casserole, you'd go over with food, you'd do something. But this was just a way.
Where she lived was in a small community in
Lytton,
in New South Wales, and the whole community have just come out.
Yeah.
The family and her fiancé, and it was just... I think that's what I love about small towns and small communities, that they all come together for one another.
Yes. All right. So, Suze, I think that's it for us today, but next week we were going to talk about expat bubbles and living inside an expat bubble because it was a great
article. I think I've lived inside a bubble my whole life. Whenever I see things, I always just say to my, oh, I'm in my bubble.
And I hope that our discussion was, I don't know what it was. I don't feel like we gave enough advice, but...
I think this is what people will take away, especially people that maybe like myself still can't wrap my head around the thought of that, is that they're actually hearing it from Yeah. And that it is a really freaking hard decision to make.
And, like, if it doesn't all work out, say we've made a terrible mistake, she can come home. And that's part of the reason of going
year 10. I have a feeling she's going to love it. I think she's going to make a couple of mistakes and she's going to learn from her mistakes and that's going to be okay.
Okay, so, Sez, I'll see you next week then.
Yeah, see you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.